ball game.
Welcome to the State of the Gamecocks podcast. Here are your hosts, Brooks and Drew.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the State of the Gamecocks podcast. My name is Brooks Davis, joined alongside by my co-host, Drew Bonds. Drew, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a ton of news so far for the offseason, especially with the coaching staff. Portal stuff is still a little bit slow, but they're putting together quite a staff under Charles Kelly, or I should say Charles Kelly is putting together quite a staff. We're going to get to a lot of that stuff here in just a second. A lot of awards to get through, and then a really fun interview at the end. So a lot of fun things in this episode, but the coaching staff is the biggest piece for right now. We're going to get to it first, and then we'll get to the fun stuff later on. But Brooks, how you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, like you said, kind of a lot going on with the coaching staff. We've added several new names, but also one familiar name to the coaching staff. We'll go ahead and dive right in it. To start off with a familiar name, Rick Trickett is being retained as the offensive line coach for Jacksonville State, and a big reason for that, or you know, probably the main reason for that, is because his son Clint Trickett, former West Virginia quarterback, has been named the offensive coordinator / quarterbacks coach. So, keeping it in the family, but I'd say the two biggest hires so far. I think that, you know, Rick Trickett has become a pretty well established name around here, and of course he has been for, you know, years and years and years around college football. He's been, if you can name a school, he's probably been there in his near 50 years of coaching college football. So we're glad to see him stay. He had a pretty stout offensive line, really developed some guys, really stout offensive lineman. One of them probably going to get drafted to the NFL, and Clay Webb. So I'm really excited about getting to keep him. Clint Trickett has been named the offensive coordinator. He comes from Georgia Southern as the passing game coordinator, as well as the tight ends and inside receivers coach. He does have offensive coordinator experience, coaching 2 years at Marshall. It says here in 2022, his offense was second in the Sun Belt in rushing at 205.9 yards per game. And with losing a guy like Trey Stewart, that's pretty comforting to see. You know, hopefully we can retain some of that, some of those rushing yards with, hopefully Justice Savage gets a lot more carries. Andrew Paul is more likely going to be the starter, and hopefully we can get that last year for Ron Wiggins. There's still been no word about that. I really like these two names. These are definitely my favorite two hires. I know Rick Trickett was already here, but I'm really excited to see what Clint Trickett, his son, can do. Drew, what do you think about the Trickett father son combo?
Yeah, I'm excited. I think retaining Rick Trickett was a huge deal for the university and for the program. And I'm excited about Clint Trickett running the offense. Like you said, his offenses at Marshall were, really good on the ground. This will be a different look, as far as it's not going to be as much running as what we saw under Rich Rod, where, you know, they may throw it 10 or 15 times a game. They're going to throw it probably 25 or 30 if they've got a guy back there that they like. But either way, I think it's going to be a really good show. You know, you got an elite level offensive line coach in Rick Trickett, and you've got someone who, you would imagine, the philosophy lines up pretty close between Rick Trickett and his son as far as what they want to do. So That cohesion there should really help help the offense. I know this offense has got a lot of rebuilding to do, losing the quarterback and the running back, you know, losing their best offensive lineman. Cam Vaughn's in the portal still, so you know, Jared Bowie's in the portal. So this offense is returning, you know, a couple of linemen and Michael Petway, but you know, beyond that, you know, Sean Brown's gone also. So they're losing a lot. You know, they talked about how much the defense is going to lose in the portal. We've, you know, gone over that a few times on the show already, but the offense is going to get hit hard also. And having two guys that are going to, you know, work together that closely, I think is going to help build the offense the way that they want it done. So, certainly happy about that. That's not the only two new faces on the coaching staff for the offense. Lawrence Dossey, migrated over from Appalachian State, be the receivers coach. He did the same job at App State, so pretty good on JSU being able to lure a guy away from that program to help out the team. So happy with that for sure. And then Bert Shep, tell me with his name, Mr. Housewright. I forget his first name for whatever reason. I don't have it written down, but
Taylor Housewright.
Yeah, Taylor Housewright will move over to be the tight ends coach. Also, he came from Georgia Southern. And according to the Georgia Southern folks on Twitter, they really liked Tim. He's got a really good FCS resume. Seemed like that was a guy that the Eagle faithful wanted to have a bigger role in the program, and he will have a bigger role, but it'll be for Jack State. So all around good news on the offensive side of the football. We got some new names on the defensive side. One big name on the defensive side, as far as the defensive coordinator, which we'll get into in a minute. But super happy with where the coaching staff, the offense is. I think they've done a really good job of building this staff back to where they want it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, kind of looking at some of these guys, it seems with Clint Trickett being named offensive coordinator, but he had a real emphasis on tight ends and inside receivers. Lawrence Dossey was a former offensive coordinator at Florida State. He was at Florida State for a long time. Was on there. Was a wide receiver coach on there on the national championship team and a few other really good Seminole teams. But it's listed on here. This article, it says he's been regarded as one of the best recruiters in the country, being named 2011 ACC Recruiter of the Year by SportsIllustrated.com. But he has really high emphasis on getting receivers. You know, like I said, he was a former OC and wide receivers coach. Taylor Housewright is same thing. Has a pass game coordinator, or the senior offensive analyst, but has an emphasis on passing game and wide receivers. Coaching wide receivers. So, you know, I know I said earlier about Trickett, you know, having a really good run offense at Marshall the 2 years he was offensive coordinator there. But with all these guys that we're hiring really having an emphasis on wide receivers in the pass game, it kind of, you know, there is no official, you know, Charles Kelly's never been a head coach before. He was a defensive coordinator. So it really sounds like he's wanting to put together a coaching staff of guys who have an emphasis on throwing the ball, and moving the ball through the air and getting, you know, stout receivers, stout tight ends. So I think we can, you know, kind of take this as a hint as, you know, Charles Kelly's really going to run his offense is really going to want to be centered around, you know, passing the ball. It's going to be weird, or not weird, but a little bit different watching Jack State next year if this is the case, and it certainly seems like it. You know, we've gotten so accustomed to watching Rich Rod's speed option offense for the last 3 years with guys like Stewart and Trey Stewart and Anwar Lewis and Ron Wiggins and John Webb and Tyler Huff, you know, running the ball, being the bulk of the offense. And that's not to say, you know, they didn't throw the ball or anything, but we're very much a run first offense, I think. And even under John Gross, you know, he ran kind of a read option offense too. So it was for over the last several years, we've gotten so accustomed to watching us being primarily a run offense. And now Kelly's coming in and looking to put together an offensive staff centered around throwing the ball. So that's just kind of my observation with based on the hires. That's what it looks like. We've gotten four guys or three guys really that are focused on that are very wide receiver and tight end centric. So I'm kind of interested to see if that is what the product that they put out on the field. And I can be completely wrong about this. That's just kind of the vibe I'm getting from it.
Yeah, I agree. Certainly something, at the very least, more balanced than we saw the last few years under Coach Rodriguez. So it'll be more, you know, bare minimum, it looks like 50-50, whereas, you know, at times with Rich Rod, it was 90-10, you know, run to pass. So we'll certainly see a more balanced offense. But what strikes me also is that, you know, you look at Charles Kelly and Lawrence Dossie and some of these guys, like, they're putting together quite the team or quite the staff of recruiters also. And I know the portal stuff's been quiet so far, other than, you know, one really good signing on the defense we'll get to in a little bit. But that's a product of hiring a new coach and that kind of thing. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But the you know, recruiter from the high school level and the portal commits, you know, as this staff gets their feet underneath them and can get started, should really take off with the recruitment level that they've put together on both sides of the ball. As far as defense goes, and this makes me feel really old, but they've hired Vinny Sinceri as defensive coordinator. He played safety. I'm sure some of you listening can remember. I can remember. I'm 24 years old. Remember him playing safety at Alabama when under, you know, Nick Saban and his dad coached on that team under, you know, when that, you know, the Tide defense was at its peak, really. He played safety for them. Was in the NFL for a short time, was on the Patriots coaching staff, and has most recently been the safeties coach at Washington. So that's another really good name, I think. I'm really happy with that. Nothing against Luke Olsen. I thought he did a fine job in the season that he had, but I do kind of think that Luke Olsen was a hire based on need and not who they wanted first when they picked him to run the defense, just because he didn't have a great track record at all of being defensive coordinator, and neither does Vinny Sinceri, but he's a younger guy, and he's a big time name as far as you're going to have kids who remember who Vinny Sinceri was when he goes to their house and talks to their parents. They're like, oh, I watched you play on TV and this and that and the other. So I'm really happy about that hire also. I think he'll do a really good job. I think, again, recruiting it seems to be what this is all built around, getting the best athletes to Jackson if they can. And from everything that we can hear, Vinny Sinceri is a great coach, and everyone seems to be really, really excited about him. So the good news is still coming as far as, you know, Jack State football. We're not slowing down. They've also hired Sean Davis, who was at Auburn as a linebacker, as the linebacker's coach. He played at Auburn a short time in the NFL again. He was a linebacker's coach at North Alabama the last few years, and now Jack State's hired him to that side of the football also to do the same job and coach linebackers. So the coaching staff is, if it's not all the way there, it's getting really close to it. So what they've been able to do, both offensively and defensively, getting guys in place to not slow down the program has been really, really good to see, even if the portal entry names have not come through the way that everyone wants them to be. But Brooks, thoughts on Vinny Sinceri or Deshaun Davis?
Yeah, I like him. I think it's a good hire. It's the young guy, you know, kind of working his way up the coaching ranks. He was, you know, like you said, the defensive back coach at, defensive back coach at Washington the last couple of years. I think looking at some of his numbers last season, or excuse me, he was the safeties, just the safeties. But anyways, helped lead the Huskies to an 8-win season, played in the Sun Bowl, and the team was fifth nationally. The defensive unit was fifth nationally in passing yards allowed per game at 166.8, and we're eighth in pass efficiency defense at 110.51. So I think this is something that, you know, especially considering all that we lost in the defensive backfield, Fred Perry, Antonio Carter, or not Antonio Carter. Anyways, all the defensive backs that we did lose, both the graduation and the transfer portal, I think you know we're going to be replacing, you know, we're going to see a lot of new names, more than likely going to be out of the transfer portal. I think we did get a few in the recruiting class, but they're going to be young, they're going to be inexperienced. So I fully trust where, you know, it's going to be a similar situation to the start of this last year, where, you know, that was one of the biggest holes in our defense, and they progressively got better as the season went on. And I think it's going to be a similar situation next year, with, you know, like I said, it's going to be a completely new secondary. But I like this. I really like this hire. Like I said, I think he's, I think he's, you know, an up and coming coach. And, I think he's really, going to be really good at motivating. You know, he's young, so he can still, relate to these guys pretty well. Like you said, I remember him. I remember watching him play at Alabama, and torturing, SEC receivers for 3 or 4 years. And it kind of makes me feel old, like you said, to see him coaching now, and considering how long ago he played. But I think it's a good hire, and Kelly thinks it's a good hire too. He's quoted as saying he's one of the brightest young coaches in the country, brings an unparalleled energy, a wealth of football knowledge, and a relentless commitment to excellence. So Kelly's really excited about him. I'm really excited about him. I think it's a good hire. I think it's a, you know, I think we need some good young coaches like this, and to kind of, and I think we, you know, we got some good ones at the coordinator positions with Clint Trickett and Vinny Sinceri. And then you mentioned too Deshaun Davis, former Auburn Tiger. Not a whole lot to go off of him. Let's see here. Spent the last two seasons coaching linebackers at North Alabama, and produced an All-American, Josh Anglin. He had 81 tackles with 7 for loss, and was second in the conference in tackles for loss. But other than that, not a ton to go off of him. He, you know, he's another. I mean, he's another young and up and coming coach. You know, he just played it. He just got done playing at Auburn in 2018, drafted in the 6th round of the NFL draft in 2019. So he's still had a short little stint in the NFL, but he's still a very young coach. He's, you know, 6 years removed from being in college. So I think this is another one. It's good to see a young name, a young coach, you know, and being able to relate these guys, you know, because they just got done playing, you know, 10 or 12 years ago or less. So I think it's a, so, you know, they're still fresh out of college, relatively fresh out of college, or fresh out of, you know, playing experience. So I think these are, there's a trend with the guys that Kelly's wanting to put on these staffs, and I really like the direction that that we're heading. We still got some other spots to fill. Defensive line coach, another specific secondary coach, but I expect it to be kind of the same trend of younger coaches. We'll see.
Absolutely. all right. Well, we have a commit, and we've all waited a very long time to get one in this particular 2025 early portal cycle, so we're going to talk about him. Jones State has signed Curtis Perry, former four-star commit. He was at Alabama first. He was the class of 2021 as far as a high school senior. Went to Alabama, played in a couple games there. Was at Virginia Tech last year, only played in one game. But he's a guy that's going to play. He's going to be on the field for Jack State, I would have to imagine, on the defensive line. He had 22 sacks his senior year in high school. I don't know. You know, you see he's got such little college time, and that's not a product of, you know, he's not good or that kind of thing. It's a product of losing out them for two seasons and, you know, the kind of athletes and players they have on that defensive line. You know, that starting defensive line goes drafted every year, all four of those guys pretty much. So Curtis Perry had to wait his turn at Bama, got in a couple games, got in a game last year at Virginia Tech. But he's a four-star guy. I would certainly expect to see him on the field. And, I mean, super excited. Big, huge athlete. Should be dominant in the Conference USA as far as getting after the passer. And certainly really, really excited to see what he's able to do for JSU. Again, not a lot of stats to go off of as far as he's had limited playing time at the college level. But if you look at his pedigree and the places that he's been, he certainly has teams that believe in him. I think Jack State believes in him. I don't think Charles Kelly would bring him in to sit on the bench at this point in his college career. So I would certainly expect to see Curtis Perry on the defensive line for Jack State next year, taking up one of those spots that J-Rock left. So really happy to have him. I don't know if Brooks had any thoughts about Curtis Perry or not. I know there's not a lot to go off of as far as stats to look at and that kind of thing, but either way, I hope you're as excited as the rest of us are.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be a pretty good addition. He's a four star recruit from Pike Road, so he's a pretty local kid. He was the number two player in the state, or number two recruited player in the state, on 24/7. 24/7's rankings, won a state championship with Pike Road, with 76 tackles, 22 sacks, and a forced fumble in 2021. So you know, it's been a little while since he's seen any sort of significant playing time. You know, he only, let me see, yeah, it says, coming from Virginia Tech, he, you know, only appeared in one game and didn't get in the stat sheet. Played and not really any playing time at Alabama, just playing in just two games in two seasons. So, you know, he might be a little rusty, but I think that the kid's a good looking athlete. He looks like he's, you know, pretty fast, pretty strong guy, and I think, you know, if Kelly can develop him, I think he ought to be a pretty good complement to Juwan Campbell, and like you said, kind of, you know, on the defensive line, and like you said, kind of filling that hole that J-Rock and Early Young and some of those guys left. Like you said, not a whole lot to go off of him, just because he hasn't really had any college playing experience, not any meaningful college playing experience. But I think that once Kelly gets a hold of him and really starts working with him and develops him, I think he has the potential to be a really good defensive lineman.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully in a couple of weeks when we come back on and talk to you guys, it is a lot more recruits to talk about. I think that's kind of the idea for right now. So, anyway, we'll kind of move on from the coaching staff and recruiting stuff. And before we get into all the awards and that kind of thing, that I know is going to be the most fun part of the episode, I guess. There is some conference news as far as who might join next that we want to get to really quickly. You know, Delaware and Missouri State will be part of the conference next year in all sports, and Delaware is going to be a really good addition. They should be competitive quickly, kind of like Jack State was in their first season. So it's always good to see the conference getting better. But from what we understand, they're still looking to expand beyond that. with more maybe FCS teams, it seems like. I know we saw a list the other day. It had Tarleton and Chattanooga and Eastern Kentucky and some of those teams. And I know that from a Jack State standpoint, Chattanooga is the number one choice for obvious reasons. That would be another big rivalry that we could have inside the conference. But it seems like Tarleton's going to be more the choice, I think. If they do expand one more time, I think it will be the Texans. But certainly from our perspective, hope it's Chattanooga. But I do think Tarleton's going to be the pick. Brooks, I don't know if you've seen the same stuff that I've seen as far as conference expansion goes. But there were several teams on the list, but I think Tarleton is still the most likely.
Yeah, that's kind of what it's looking like. I've seen several murmurs around Twitter saying that it's going to be Tarleton. From a Jack State perspective, that's kind of the one team that I not saying I don't want them to join the conference. You know, I welcome anybody. But from a Jack State standpoint, all the other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the five other targets that are kind of get thrown around for moving up make a little bit more sense in how they relate to Jack State. Now, obviously, Jack State is not the focal point. It's not the focal point of this conference by any means. You know, New Mexico State needs a little bit closer opponent, because as of right now, it's just Louisiana Tech. Excuse me. But you know, I really would have liked to seen Chattanooga, and I still think that there is a world where Chattanooga moves up. If they were to move up, I think they could compete in just about every sport. The only sport they don't have is baseball. Otherwise, I think they've got the facilities. I think they've got the fan support. They're about the same size school as us. I looked it up. They only have about 500 more students than we do. And obviously, you know, that has been that was a really, really fun rivalry, in the FCS days. And then, so, you know, Chattanooga is obviously our first choice. Again, I know the conference doesn't revolve around Jack State, but I really, really hope that we can get Chattanooga up here soon, and, you know, kind of start back that rivalry. Maybe have a little triangle of hate between us, Kennesaw, and Chattanooga. But the other ones that are kind of getting thrown around, Stephen F. Austin, Central Arkansas, Campbell, and Eastern Kentucky. And like I said, all those have ties to Jack State. Stephen F. Austin and Campbell were both in the Southland Conference with us when we first moved up to the FCS or 1AA at the time. Central Arkansas was in the ASUN with us for the short period of time that we were in that conference, and then Eastern Kentucky was a long time foe in both the OVC and the in the ASUN, so we're very familiar with the Colonels. But everyone else, like I said, I think if they did join, I think it would be, you know, I think it would most make the most sense as to how they relate to in their history with JSU. So I would gladly welcome all of them. It's been a while since we've played Campbell and Central Arkansas now, and Eastern Kentucky now that it's been two, three years since we left the ASUN. But and then we played Stephen F. Austin in the Montgomery kickoff a few years ago too. But Tarleton, I think we played them that one year that it was the it was that WAC ASUN conference alliance thing that they're kind of playing in now. So from what it sounds like, like you said, Tarleton is the most likely to join it, from what it sounds like. So that it's looking like we could be welcoming the Texans to the to Conference USA here soon. But I again would really like to see Chattanooga make that jump next. But I guess we'll have to continue to play the waiting game on them and the others.
Yeah, we'll see. That'll be 2026 or later for any of those additions for sure. Before then, we're gonna enjoy the where the conference is headed with Delaware, Missouri State. The conference is certainly improving without a doubt. So, all right, without further ado, we're going to do some awards now. Some end of the season, not a ton of them. I don't think we realized we thought we'd have more. We sat down. It's kind of hard to come up with a lot of them unless you get really cheesy and really weird, and we're not going to do that. So anyway, we're going to start with some of the ones that are, I don't know, maybe don't matter as much, and then we're going to get into some of the more fun ones as we go on. But we posted a few of these on Twitter for you guys to look at and vote on with us. And we're going to start with the best uniform award. And this doesn't go to a person. It goes to whatever uniform you guys like the best out of the year. And to our surprise, it was the black on black with the white helmet, which I should say to our surprise, that was a very good looking uniform that they wore a couple of times. They wore it in the conference championship game, which I think surprised both me and Brooks that they went for black for the conference title game. But as much love as the red on red with the white AKC helmet got throughout the year, I thought that was going to be the runaway favorite. But you guys went a different direction. So I think they're both really good options. I do like the red on red with the white helmet a little more. I think it's a cleaner look. I think it looks more like JSU. But there's no, you know, you're not going to argue that the black doesn't look good. It looks a very good looking uniform, and it's got a lot of it's got quick history as far as they won a conference championship wearing that uniform. So we're going to see it again for probably several years to come. And I would imagine if they host another conference title game, we're going to see them wear black again because it worked just really well the first time. So, Brooks, surprise you also as far as the black on black taking the cake there?
Yeah, kind of. And it was the one that appeared the most out of our we wore an alternate uniform set really all year. We never had a set, you know, a set home and set away uniform set. We kind of wore something different just about every game. I thought it was a clean look. I really liked the helmet. I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting to see it as many times as we did. I figure we might, you know, see it. We might see it the one game against Middle Tennessee State. Now, of course, that game we wore the black on black, but we also wore the red helmet with the black AKC, and I thought that looked pretty good. But the only problem is you couldn't really see the AKC real well on the red helmet. I didn't think anyways. I thought I'm like you though, the red on red on white, red jersey, red pants, white helmet. I thought that was our cleanest look all year, when we wore them against, Florida International. And I was really hoping to see him again, you know, maybe in the conference championship. But if I had to guess, that Richard, I'd probably let the team pick it out. And, everybody loves wearing black nowadays. I know that kind of makes me sound like an old head, but everybody likes wearing black, even if it's not a part of your color set. And black's something that we've kind of adopted across all our sports over the last several years. So I like it. I think it's a really clean look, but I'm like you. I still think the red on red on white is the best look. Hopefully, we see it more next year, but I'm sure we'll see black some more too, as popular as they were.
Yeah, absolutely. So, moving on, we did a kind of the best moments of the year. We put four or five on there, let you guys pick. And winning the conference by 40 points, won by a landslide, which was expected. You know, the Hail Mary against La Tech got a lot of love too. But you know, when you win a conference championship and you're your first year eligible and you do it in the fashion that JSU did it in, I think that's going to stick out to most everybody, and it should. That was the goal when the season started. So just makes a lot of sense. Again, the Hail Mary against La Tech was it didn't save the season, but at the time it kind of felt like it did. Because we didn't know that Western was going to lose two games down the stretch. We didn't know, you know, that we were going to beat Sam Houston and clinch a spot that early. And it kind of felt like the Hail Mary saved the season because we'd already had, you know, three losses. You know, they were out of conference. We were a little bit worried about, you know, losing to Western Kentucky like we did on the road. And if we had another conference loss, we would have two. We'd be in the same boat as Liberty, Sam Houston, and Western. Now, we still would have gotten in if that happened because we had the head-to-head against Liberty and Sam Houston. But at the time, we didn't know that. So I didn't want to talk about the Hail Mary as far as at the time felt like a very, very important. And it was. You don't want to lose any football games. But at the time felt even more important than what it turned out to be. You know, now we look back on it, it's like, okay, they threw a Hail Mary to beat La Tech. It was a great game, something to remember. You'll see that highlight forever. But it didn't have a huge role in how the year played out like we thought it would when it initially happened, I think. So in the conference, we'll take the award. The Hail Mary was a relatively close second. There were some other comments, you know, beating Liberty, beating Sam Houston to clinch our title spot. So several fun ones to look at there. But certainly winning the conference in the fashion that they did was the – it was the goal when the year started, and that'll be what everyone remembers from the 2024 Gamecock football team.
Yeah, I think that, and this is just me, I think that the Louisiana Tech Hail Mary was the best play of the year. And, you know, kind of like you said, at the time it didn't feel – It wasn't the play. It didn't at the time. It didn't feel like it, you know, saved the season or anything. But it ended up, you know, looking at the big picture, it absolutely played a part into it. And, you know, help us keep the win streak alive, keep the conference win streak alive, and you know, ultimately, you know, looking at the big picture, everything else that happened with Liberty losing, Western losing, Sam Houston losing, everybody else helping us out, and, you know, us doing what we had to do to make that play and keep our conference championship hopes alive. You know, that, you know, it ended up being a bigger play, much more than just hanging on against a mediocre Louisiana Tech team. But yeah, it's absolutely the best moment was absolutely beating Western by 40 to win the conference. You know, after had a little bit of a sour taste left in our mouth the week before and losing the way that we did on the road in Bowling Green, but still getting another shot to beat them again and win a conference championship at the same time. And just the way that we did was just a pure domination. And I'll be honest, wasn't one that I saw coming. I really thought it was going to be another close game. Freezing cold, absolutely freezing cold. Probably the second coldest I've ever been at a football game, but absolutely. But you know, again, everything that we've said multiple times throughout the year to start off 0-3 and finish the season the way that we did and dominate Western the way that we did to win the conference championship. That was it was an all time moment for the year, and you know, one of the top five moments in Jack State football history, without a doubt.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, I've got a couple fun ones before we get into the offensive and defensive MVP and that kind of thing. I have the pissed off quarterback award, which goes to Tyler Huff in the bowl game for fighting the Ohio defense at one point. After I don't remember the Ohio player's name for stepping on Jacob Berrick. So Tyler Huff gets the pissed off quarterback award. I've never seen a quarterback go fight someone quite like Huff did in that game. So thought that deserved something to look back on. I have the Please Don't Call Me for Targeting Award, which goes to Fred Perry, because it seemed like every other game he was under review for targeting. And I don't think he got ejected except for the one time against New Mexico State. I think it was, yeah, other than that, it was clean. So, or at least it was called not
in, against Western in the conference championship.
Yeah. So, it just seemed like he got called for targeting a whole lot and only stood one time. So, some kind of award there maybe. And then, we don't have another one to really give as far as offensive and defense MVP. So we're just going to give the hardest worker award to Trey Stewart, because there's no other way for us to really talk about him, because you guys are going to figure it out anyway. Tyler Huff's going to take the other award. So we're going to give Trey Stewart the hardest worker award, maybe the hardest runner, however you guys want to think of that. But he, as many carries as he got in this offense, and like we said, when the year started, we thought it was going to be a slew of guys in that backfield as far as Anwar and Andrew Paul and Trey Stewart and Ron Wiggins. We thought everyone was going to see carries, and man, it was like Trey Stewart all year. Andrew Paul got a carry here and there. Anwar didn't seem like he got a carry after the fifth game, I don't think. And obviously Ron was pretty much injured all year. So Trey Stewart carried the running back room by himself. And there is certainly some things to be said for what he was able to do. So some kind of recognition goes his way. And I know that Pro Day is still ahead for Jack State. And, Tyler Huff and Trey Stewart and Clay Webb and those guys will be a part of that. So if there's an NFL team looking to pick up a running back in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round that maybe you haven't heard of yet, I think Trey Stewart's an NFL quality back. I really do. He's a different kind of running back than what Jack State has seen. We remember Buster or Tremaine Pope, for those who remember him back in 2014 and 2015. But what Trey Stewart did this year was something different from the running back position. So I didn't want to talk about him for a minute. And then I have the Great Wall of Jacksonville, which goes to all five of the offensive linemen, of course, led by Clay Webb and Will Olstein on the left side. But, Brock Ruby got hurt middle of the year. We had players step up and play in that place. I know Cam Jones had a good year. So those five or six guys deserve all the credit in the world. Coach Trickett deserves all the credit in the world for getting those guys ready to go. So I didn't want to shout them out also before we moved on to other stuff. But Brooks, thoughts about those little teeny tiny awards that I came up with right at the end?
Yeah, the those are pretty good. You mentioned there at the end, I had one that I wanted to throw in, but you kind of took it. I was going to do you've called our offensive line Rick Trickett's bullies. And I wanted to do Rick Trickett's bully of the year. Our offensive line as a whole unit was absolutely outstanding. But there was one that stood out the most. And it's the guy that's more than likely going to get drafted. And I want to say the first five rounds of the draft, maybe even fourth or third. And that's Clay Webb. The guy was one of the top, was a five-star out of college. Went to Georgia and didn't really work out there, but he was always going to be, he was always destined to be a really good offensive lineman and an NFL draft pick. I think he absolutely is going to be, and he just, once he came back home to Jack State, he picked up right where he left off at Oxford. He was first team all conference, second team all American, by the Football Writers Association of America. He was part of a unit that was top 35 nationally in sacks allowed, with just 1.38 a game, and tackles for loss allowed 4.08. That one stands out even more than me than the sacks, because you will see a lot of games where a quarterback nobody will get to the quarterback. Just about every game, there's going to be tackles for loss, and the average only just over four is mind blowing. And this one kind of stood out to me too. Five career penalties. And the kid has been playing football since 2019. Five career penalties and 2,200 snaps. It's just it's just absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. So I want to give my my award, the Rick Trickett Bully of the Year, to Clay Webb.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did actually skip one too. I had the we're going to call it the Pulled on Your Heartstrings Award, which goes to Logan Smothers for scoring on his last snap in the title game. And that would have been, for me, that was kind of a moment where I would have liked to see the entire team go to the end zone and take your penalty like Georgia did back in the day against Florida. But Logan Smothers checking in and running, I don't know, it was 12 or 13 yards, somewhere along in there, on just a student body right quarterback sweep play against an exhausted Hilltopper defense and getting in. And I do think that was his last snap. I don't think Jackson got the ball back in that game. I think Western held it for the rest of the contest after that. So that was one of my favorite moments of the year. It was the last, touchdown before the bowl game, I guess. But I did want to talk about that a little bit. That stood out for me from the conference championship game, seeing and Smothers only here for a couple of years, but it just feels like he's done a lot for the program as far as splitting time with Zion Webb last year, and he was basically the reason they won the bowl game, leading a couple scoring drives there late. I know Zion Webb did come back in and throw the touchdown pass and to send us to overtime and that kind of thing. But Jack State would not be where they are right now if Logan Smothers wasn't a part of that team last year, and he's certainly deserving of recognition as far as, you know, we're not going to see him again. Don't know what he's going to do for the rest of his career, whether he goes into coaching or whatnot. But, we did get to see him score a touchdown on his last collegiate snap, which I thought was really, really cool. So I did want to talk about that before we get on to their stuff. But the two big ones here at the end, we have a defensive MVP and an offensive MVP, or really it's going to be a defensive MVP and a team MVP, I guess we're going to call that. But you guys picked the defensive MVP on Twitter, and it's a little surprising, just a little, but you picked J-Rock. I have no issues with us giving J-Rock whatever award he wants to get. He is almost Mr. Gamecock at this point. He's been around that long. He's from Talladega. He wants to get into coaching. I would sort of be surprised if he does not do some kind of coaching at Jack State in the near future. I'm not sure he was the best player on defense this year. There were a lot of guys that were big-time contributors, especially down the stretch when the defense really found their footing. But you guys did pick out J-Rock Swain. Again, I have no real issues with that because he is such a beloved player on the defense. He's been around for quite a while. It's a name everyone is familiar with. But for me, I mean, what Zechariah Poise was able to do, I know he jumped ship to Miami, but led the team or was tied for the team leading interceptions, was the best DB on the field for us pretty much all year. And then after that, I mean, did y'all watch Fred Perry play football? I mean, he was the, from what I can remember, besides what Darius Jackson did rushing the passer in 2014 and 2015, Fred Perry might have been the funnest player to watch on defense Jack State's had in a long, long time. He was all over the field. I know he picked up a bad penalty here and there, and that drove everybody completely crazy. But that star position that Fred Perry played, whether he was rushing the passer, playing defense, or laying the wood over the middle, Fred Perry was a really fun player to watch. I think Reggie Hughes is a guy who could have been considered for the Defensive Player of the Year. Laete Hale, same thing. Jabril Alameen, same thing. So several guys to think of. But for me, it's Zechariah Poyser. You guys picked out J-Rock. Again, no issues with that. But Brooks, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm kind of in the same boat. I understand it with J-Rock. Like you said, he's been Mr. Jack State the last few years. He's been an outstanding linebacker, and cannot be more thankful for what he's done for that defensive, the Gamecock defensive unit. But I'm kind of like you. Fred Perry was just, he was all over the field. He did it all. He didn't have any interceptions this year, but he broke up a lot of passes. He had two forced fumbles. He had tackles after tackles after tackles, even had three sacks. it just, you know, like you said, I remember texting you during the bowl game that Fred Perry had kind of become a liability just with the guy played like his hair was on fire. And that was a lot of times was a good thing. And a lot of times was a bad thing. And you know, there were too many instances where it was a bad thing, you know, kind of getting in fights, getting targeting penalties, stuff like that. But the guy was just an all around athlete. I would have given it to Fred Perry. I know you said Zechariah Boiser. I think I would have given my defensive MVP to Fred Perry. But like I said, I understand where a lot of people are coming from with J-Rock Swain. The guy was he was captain for about half the season. Well spoken guy, very articulate guy. You know, he's one of the guys that was always in press conferences that the media always wanted to talk to because he was, you know, he was such a great guy. Really fun to talk to. So he was a leader. He was the leader on defense. So I totally understand that. But just he had the leadership qualities, I think, that Fred Perry, you know, might not have necessarily had in terms of, you know, discipline, keeping your head on straight and all that. But I think from a on-field production standpoint, I think it was Fred Perry. But that's just me.
Yeah, absolutely. Fred Perry and Zechariah Poizier were one and two for me. And you need a player like Fred Perry. You know, Alabama had Rolando McClain, who picked up penalties and personal fouls left and right in his day. We see the same thing with some of the Georgia players, you know. But a really good defense, needs a player who's going to play with their hair on fire and take shots and that kind of thing. And Fred Perry was that guy for Jack State. You know, there was never a question that Fred Perry played his absolute hardest on every snap. He was 110% all the time. If he made a mistake, it was going 110 miles an hour. It might have been a high hit, might have been a slap an opponent in the face after the play was over, whatever it was. But he was a really good player. Like you said, him and Zech Poizier are one and two for me. I do like I didn't think Zechariah Poizier and his ability to force turnovers and play the deep part of the field was maybe a little more valuable. Because if you kind of go back and look, Jack State did not get beat deep very much this year. I know they gave a long touchdown to Middle Tennessee State at one point, but you know, you can think of very few instances of you know, long touchdown passes against Jack State. I think a lot of that has to do with how good Zechariah Poizier was, you know, playing center field. You look at Caden Beltkamp, who seemed to throw the ball over the field against everybody and really struggled again in the conference title game. And I think the secondary as a whole obviously has a lot to do with that, but, you know, Zechariah Poizier probably taking away the deep middle, you know, really affected the Hilltopper game plan. So a couple of guys to think about there. Again, J-Rock will take the award this year. It'll go to somebody else next year, just due to the fact that J-Rock will not be around. So we'll wait, you know, 365 days until we get back to this same episode again. And I do have, before we get to the team MVP, I know I keep pushing it off, I have the Bad Sportsmanship of the Year award, which goes to Caden Salter for pushing our damn ball boy after he threw a pick that sealed the game. Not that any Western Kentucky, or excuse me, not that any Liberty fans are listening to this podcast, but Caden Salter gets that award for picking up a personal foul. I can remember very, very few instances of quarterback picking up personal fouls. And, you know, Caden Salter picked up one for pushing our ball boy, and Tyler Huff picked up one for trying to fight Ohio this year, you know, during Jack State games. So kind of weird that, you know, two Jack State games had quarterbacks picking up personal fouls when you almost never see it. So they were talking about that I didn't want to give Caden Salter a bad award because why not? Anyway, we do have a team MVP, which you guys can probably guess it goes to Tyler Huff. There was nobody else to even consider, really, what he was able to do stepping in after the Coastal game as the starter and leading this team to eight straight wins, a conference championship. You know, they beat all the conference teams on their schedule. You know, they'd lose to Western the first time and then got them in the title game, so they did beat all the conference teams on their schedule. They played everybody except for UTEP, who they beat last year, so we'll count it, I guess. But what Tyler was able to do when he was in command of this offense was nothing short of spectacular. You know, I'm not going to sit here and bore you guys with a bunch of numbers. You watch the games just like we did. You know what he did on the ground, even some times through the air. And he threw the ball for over 350 yards in the bowl game. You know, sour end of the season because they came up 3 points short. But we thought for a lot of the year, you know, we're not throwing the ball because maybe our quarterback is just not great at throwing it. And he threw it all over the field against Ohio. It looked really, really good. So he kind of proved by the end of the year he could really do it all. And led this team to things that the team has never done before, as far as going on a run like that and winning a conference championship game and that kind of thing. And I'm going to ruin it here. We do have our interview of the day is with Tyler Huff. You'll hear that in just a second. I think it's about 20 minutes long. It'll be at the very end. So hope you guys enjoy that, show it some love. But Brooks, team MVP thoughts. Can't imagine that your pick goes anywhere else besides Tyler Huff.
Yeah, no, a lot of people might say Trey Stewart, but Trey Stewart was phenomenal. He was third in the country in rushing yards and, you know, touchdown after touchdown. But I think it was absolutely Tyler Huff. The guy came in, he transferred from Furman and Presbyterian, and, you know, knew that he was going to have to, you know, and he'll tell his story a little bit more in our interview with him here at the end, but came in, knew he was going to have to fight for a starting spot with, you know, Zion Turner, who also transferred in from UConn, and Logan Smothers, who was already established name within the program and had really proven himself. And part of the deal with him, you know, he got a break with Smothers getting an injury. But the guy got an opportunity to become the leader of this team, and he took it. And you know, passed the prove it test with flying colors. It was just absolutely a phenomenal quarterback, and he was the definition of grit. You know, we always talked about grit and toughness. And like you said, you know, getting in a fight in the bowl game, and you know, he was one of the guys. You could tell it. That game really mattered to him. That Ohio game, he never laid down. He never laid down. He never showed any moment of weakness. He had a couple bad passes here and there, but you know, like I said, over 350 yards passing. He just some good production on the ground. Just everything about the guy, you know, just really, really stood out as MVP quality. I think from both an on-field production standpoint and a leadership standpoint. Like I said, everything coming, you know, everything facing him, staring him in the face coming in, transferring, and he got his opportunity and he shined. And he shined, you know, he was just an absolute leader all year. And, you know, I don't think he'll ever have to buy a beer coming into whenever he visits Jacksonville again. He'll always be remembered as, you know, I really wish we could have had him for more than one season. I really like to see what he could have done, under, you know, another year wearing red and white, but, you know, absolutely, one of the greatest single seasons, in Jacksonville State history. And I think he more than deserving of the offensive MVP. And, like Drew said, this is the cat's out of the bag. That's our Tyler Huff is our first ever interview. It was a lot of we heard some really interesting stories from him, and you know, hearing just a little bit more personal stuff about him was really interesting. It was a really fun interview to do, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave it here. We're going to do our outro here and then play the interview. I know that's going to be a little bit weird, but it'll save us a whole lot of weird editing and that kind of thing, and we're not very good at the editing part of this. So if you made it this far, we are pretty much exactly 1 hour into it, so we will put the interview when it starts, a little time code in there for you guys. It'll be at the 1 hour mark. You'll be able to see that. But again, this show doesn't end in the off season. It'll be a little more sparse as far as uploads go. You won't hear from us twice a week. You'll hear from us, you know, once every 2 weeks or so. We'll be engaged on Twitter the entire time, obviously, with you guys. So if you haven't found us over there yet, come find us on Twitter. We do a whole lot of fun stuff over there. A lot of great interaction and that kind of thing. But we'll leave it there. We'll see you guys here in a few weeks, and I hope you enjoy our Tyler Huff interview. And then, yeah, see ya.
All right. We would now like to welcome on a very special guest to State of the Gamecocks, our first ever special guest on the podcast. He's got a list of accolades a mile long. He's been Conference USA MVP, Championship Game MVP. Newcomer of the year, second in the country in rushing yards for a quarterback, and the list goes on and on and on. He's one of the greatest to do it in recent history, wearing the red and white. He's now former quarterback, Jacksonville State quarterback, Tyler Huff. Tyler, we can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us.
Absolutely appreciate y'all, man. It's exciting.
Cool. All right. So to start with, I think most everyone who listens to us knows the story, but we'll kind of hear it from your end. How did you get to Jack State? I know Rich Rod came to Arizona and talked to you, but if you can kind of go through that with us and from your perspective, we'll start with that.
Okay, yeah. So I graduated Furman in the December of 23, and I had to go to actually Arizona and do my Army time, so I had to spend 4 months out there for training camp. Kind of pushed that, you know, that training camp back, because technically I was supposed to do it, you know, probably like 2 years later or 2 years earlier, right when I commissioned as a second lieutenant of the Army. But pushed it back. I was able to do it a little bit later. So I had to go out to Fort Huachuca, actually out there in Arizona, really, really far down south. It was like 10, 15 miles off the border of Mexico. So we're down there. Me and my wife went down there with our dog. And was down there, was in the transfer portal. Honestly, didn't get a lot of love just because I'm a little smaller guy. And but I think mainly it was because I couldn't come until the summer. A lot of coaches and programs want guys to play spring ball with them. So I wasn't too attractive on the out of the portal just because of that reason. And, you know, Rich Rod came down there. I don't know the exact date, but it's pretty early on. I'd say like mid-January-ish. Came down there, met him, actually met me and my wife, went to Chili's down there and talked ball with him. Hung out with him for about an hour. And then I think I committed to him probably a week later. And then I don't know the exact date again. I would say like February-ish. Went up on a visit, again, me and my wife, and we went to the first practice of spring ball. So I got to see Rich Rod live. You know, I was warned before, you know, you're going to see a fiery guy. So, and I definitely saw it day one of spring ball. So, but that's where I got to meet everybody on my little visit. And yeah, it was good.
Cool. That kind of answers one of the things I wanted to ask. You know, we went and watched the spring game in the rain. It was a miserable experience for everybody. I know you didn't play. How quickly did you have to learn the offense before August rolled around?
I had to learn it pretty quick, but, you know, Coach Smith was phenomenal. I met with him probably 2-3 times a week throughout the week while I was down there in Arizona before I actually got up there. And we installed the offense, and, you know, we were constantly watching film together. He was showing me what they, you know, how they did their offense, how they did their play, their terminology, that kind of thing. So I wasn't, when I stepped foot on campus in May, it wasn't completely brand new for me. So I had a good introduction to it. But, you know, ever since that, when I was here in the summer, I met with Coach Smith and Coach Rich Rod several times on, you know, your little free periods throughout the day to make sure I was all the way into it before fall camp started.
So you come in, you learn the offense. Rich Rod said multiple times, you know, we don't have a starter. We have co-starters, but you know, that first game of the season, Coastal Carolina, Logan Smothers goes on the field first, and then we see a little bit of you, and then Smothers gets that injury. And then once, you know, from that point, it was your team from there on, or, you know, the rest is history, what all you were able to do. Just kind of tell us, you know, when was that moment that you realized, you know, or you or the coaching staff realized that, you know, hey, this is my team now. This is, you know, I'm going to be the one to, you know, has to step up, be the leader of this team, and, you know, eventually lead us to a conference championship.
Well, with the starting thing, it was kind of funny. You know, me and Logan were both in the dark that whole, you know, that whole fall camp. We competed, and neither one of us knew who was going to start until I would say probably 5 hours before kickoff. You know, we're at walkthrough in the hotel parking lot right before we get on the bus to go play, and that's when he told us that Logan's going to start. But we're going to rotate. You know, we're going to play, and obviously Coastal was an awful game. You know, I think it kind of, you know, me and Logan didn't play well just because, you know, you couldn't really get our footing in, and obviously went down with the injury. So, but you know, just that was a pretty rough start. Obviously, I wanted to put my mark on my on the team and, you know, show that why I should be the guy. Clearly, I didn't do it that game. So I was a little frustrated, but I think whenever going to Louisville, you know, we all knew that was going to be a tough one. We had to play pretty almost perfect to, you know, kind of beat that team. Very good team. But I think after the Louisville game, obviously it was in the back of my head. I knew just because how Logan and Zion Webb last year, how they kind of rotated a lot. So I always knew in the back of my head that it was always a possibility. I know that Rich Rod likes to do that. So I just knew after the Louisville game, whenever I knew he was back healthy and it was a possibility for him to play, I just, you know, had to put it in my hands. You know, I wanted to be the guy. So I just knew I had to put on a performance every week to make sure I wasn't taking off the field.
Yeah. Awesome. Kind of along there, you know, you talked about, you know, the Coastal game, you know, you guys didn't play the best. And obviously Louisville was a really tough game. When do you think y'all found your footing and it turned around? Cause you know, after Eastern Michigan, you know, you kicked ass and took names for 2-3 months there in a row. When did that start in your opinion, like where the team turned around and found their footing?
Yeah, I think it was obviously tough growing pains, but I think we saw as a team every week we were getting better. You know, obviously Eastern was a heartbreaker. Felt like we shouldn't have let that one go, but I think we all saw what we had. And, you know, we knew Southern Miss was going to be, you know, a favorable matchup for us just because they've struggled in the past year. So we knew that if that was time to get it going, it was going to be that one. And, I mean, we got out early on them on offense and then defense. I think we had like 3 turnovers, like pretty early in the first half, and we started getting up on them. And I think just from that first half, I think everybody kind of got confidence for this year and to see what we can do. You know, defense get up on them early with the turnovers and bad decisions, and offense, you know, we're going to run the ball and get up early on them. And, you know, when you run the ball, put up points, it's a little bit more demoralizing for a team. So when we saw we could do that, it's it definitely played in our favor, and a lot of teams couldn't handle it.
Okay. You mentioned earlier about how it was kind of a after doing everything with the military in Arizona, it was kind of a quick turnaround once you got to Jacksonville. Kind of talk about, you know, we see quarterbacks tend to have a relationship with specific receivers or running backs or offensive linemen. You know, from the time you got to Jacksonville, you know, was there that guy that, you know, you kind of bonded with differently? And, you know, we see, you know, you and Trey Stewart were our two, you know, were pretty much the offense for most of the year. Was it, you know, was it Trey? Was it, you know, Will Osteen, Clay Webb? You know, was there that guy that, you know, you really bonded with both on and off the field?
Yeah, honestly, it would absolutely be Trey Stewart. I mean, we were in the training room. I mean, it opened every day about 7 a.m., and we didn't leave until about 8 or 9 p.m. that night. So we were both in there together every day, all together. So that was definitely my guy up there. Obviously, he was a new guy coming in, so we kind of had that mutual footing right there. But, yeah, Trey Stewart was my guy. Obviously, I was friends with everybody, but just because I spent the most time with him, I was in the training room the most out of everything in the facility. Much more than meeting rooms or on the actual field practicing. Was in the training room just trying to get healthy every week. So, and it was always with Trey. Obviously, he was getting beat up just as much as me. So, yeah, just the amount of time we spent together is just kind of uneven. So, yeah, Trey was my guy.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's kind of what we thought, but we just wanted to see.
It certainly translated to on-the-field production.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about the win streak and the conference championship. I don't have a specific question about, you know, winning 8 straight and then winning the conference by 38 points. Just anything from that run stand out in your opinion? The FIU game was probably the best home game of the year, at least from an atmosphere perspective, and how good that game was. Anything from the run or the conference championship stand out to you as far as your favorite moment?
Favorite moment? I would probably say just I would say beating Liberty or Sam Houston. I would say Sam Houston just because, you know, we clinched our spot in the conference championship game, and obviously everybody's pretty excited. At that point, we were, I don't know, 8-3, I think, at that point. So we're obviously hot, and everybody's feeling good about themselves. So I would say Sam Houston. We always knew they were going to be a team at the end of the year, them and Western Kentucky, that we're going to have to be ready for. And, you know, Western Kentucky ended up getting us. But, you know, the Sam Houston game, I think, was the best, you know, feeling, you know, after that game.
Yep. That was the cigar game, I think, if I remember correctly.
It absolutely was. Yes, sir.
Cool. I know Brooks wanted to kind of ask you, how do you balance your Army Reserve stuff in football? I know it doesn't necessarily coincide at the same time, at least it didn't this past year. But how do you balance, you know, what's essentially a full-time job for you and this football season? Was there conflicts of interest or extra things you had to do, something like that?
No, it wasn't really anything extra. Like I said, I was in the facility the whole time. So, I mean, I was a grad student. I already had my master's from Furman, so I didn't have any class, so I was just always in the building all day. So, like, Army-wise, really didn't have too much demands. They've been pretty good to me, so, I mean, there was no conflict at all.
Okay. Cool.
Well, just I know that's, you know, military life can, as you know, military life can be very, you know, strenuous and very demanding. So, you know, I always wondered how, you know, you see it with guys at the service academies balancing pretty well, but always wondered how that worked for, you know, someone in your position where, you know, we're not a military school, being able to balance
right.
that military life and being able to play football at such a high level, like you've been able to do this, well, really your whole career.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like if I was active duty, it would be, I mean, I couldn't play football. It would, I mean, when I was active duty down in Arizona, doing all that training for the 4 or 5 months, I mean, my days were full. I mean, 5 a.m. was like PT for about an hour and a half. And then, you know, you're working the rest of the day until 5 o'clock. Yeah, it's not like other jobs where you can kind of get home early. No, you're strict schedule. You're 9 to 5 and then you got PT in the morning. So, yeah, if I was active duty, yeah, I wouldn't be able to do it. But being in the reserve is a lot more laid back. So it's not as, I guess, demanding.
Cool. Good deal. What's next for you as far as now, I guess?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm training for my pro day. I started yesterday. Been out here down in Florida. I moved in on Friday and kind of settled in over the weekend. Yeah, I started training yesterday, Monday, and then today again. But, yeah, I got invited to a Senior Bowl down in Fort Worth, and it's on January 12th. So I'll be down there, hopefully be able to play in front of some scouts and kind of get my name out there. And, you know, after that, I'm just – train it again. I don't know when our pro day is. Hasn't been finalized yet. I think kind of with, you know, Rich Rod leaving, everything's kind of been out of whack. We're trying to, you know, settle down, I think. So, you know, I asked Greg Seitz what that day is, but he hasn't finalized the date yet. And a lot of us are kind of waiting on it. We're all kind of looking forward to that date so we can plan accordingly. But it'll be a handful of us training for the pro day. But yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to ask if Rich Rod leaving affected your stuff with pro day and that kind of thing. So that answers that question a little bit.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll get that stuff straight for you guys. Have you got a chance to talk to Charles Kelly at all? I know you're in a little bit of a different position since you're graduated and moving on, but have you spoken to him or gotten to listen to him speak?
Yeah. It was kind of a different situation. We, you know, he talked to us after the bowl game, actually, in our locker room. Greg Seitz brought him in and kind of introduced him, say, hey, this is our guy. Definitely, you know, a little weird, never done anything a part of that. You know, it's, you know, I'm hugging all my guys, you know, hey, appreciate everything, you know, I probably won't see 99% of y'all ever again kind of thing. So yeah. I'm just trying to, like, you know, get that in my mind. And then, you know, they bring in a new coach, obviously it has nothing to do with me, but, you know, just kind of sitting there, you know, seeing it was a weird situation, honestly, I'm not gonna lie. But hearing, I heard him do his little 20-minute talk to the team, you know, hey, don't transfer, this is what I'm gonna offer you, this is what we can do, all that good stuff. But other than that, I haven't had any conversation with him.
Okay. Cool. I didn't know if, yeah, I didn't realize he was down in Orlando. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly thank you for joining us for 15 or 20 minutes here and giving us your time. I haven't asked you anything that's going to get anybody upset with you, but I'm going to end with one of those questions. What is your favorite place to eat in Jacksonville?
Place to eat? So they took me to Afina's on my visit, and I've been there a few times since that. So Afina's is up there. Afina's. I don't know if I'm saying it. Afina's, the Italian place. I would say Afina's or Jefferson's, and I would probably say Jefferson's because they hooked us up. Because I took me and the lineman out to dinner, and they hooked it up for us and got us all, you know, free meal. So I would say Jefferson's just because they hooked us up.
Okay.
What would you recommend at Jefferson?
Dude, I got, I don't remember the sauce. I want to say it was like Cajun ranch, and I got it like their double dipped or double fried, whatever their, you know, their main thing is. I got that, and it was phenomenal. It was the Cajun ranch, I want to say, yeah, but I got 20 wings loaded up, and yeah, the Cajun ranch, that's what you need right there.
Yep.
That was good stuff.
Yeah, we have limited options in Jacksonville. I lived in Florida for a couple of years when I was in school, so limited options in Jacksonville compared to probably what you're used to.
Anyway.
Like we said, we really appreciate you giving us 20 minutes and talking to us. We wish you the best of luck going forward, and we'll keep an eye on Pro Day and that kind of thing. And anyway, appreciate it.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys, man. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Take care.